Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents False Mistress by Amy License, narrated by Esther Wayne. For, as I have read in volumes old, a false lying tongue is hard to withhold. A slanderous tongue, a tongue of a scold, worketh more mischief than can be told. That, if I wish not to be controlled, yet somewhat to say I dare well be bold, how some delight for to lie thick and threefold. Against Venomous Tongues, John Skelton. 1. September 1528. Autumn had taken England in its hold. In every lane and every village, leaves kindled into a blaze of red and yellow. The early morning saw soft mist linger, clinging to the hedgerows, and to sheep chewing blandly in the fields. Before long, gentle sunshine had burned the mist away. It lit the spires of churches, the ripe apples being picked in orchards, the hay bales stacked ready for the barn. It shone on the side of a carriage, drawn along by four grey horses, with the sign of a star and crescent moon painted on the side. At the carriage window, an elegantly dressed lady in her late 40s peered outside at the changing scenery. "Well, I am very much looking forward to seeing Raycroft Court, even if it is such a long drive. I have heard it is the finest building in Sussex, well situated, with beautiful grounds." Lady Elizabeth Marwood was growing restless after almost 5 hours on the road. Often illness kept her confined to her house, sitting in her chamber or taking slow walks about the garden. This long coach journey, during which she had been squashed knee to knee with her family, was taking its toll. She wore the best London fashions to complement her pale colouring, a gown with hanging sleeves in sea green, embroidered with Venetian silver and decorated with pearls. Her once golden hair, now streaked white at the temples, was drawn back under a white coif, on top of which was placed a half-moon French hood, after she had grudgingly accepted the new style was here to stay. The best clothes, though, for all their beauty, had a habit of being stiff and uncomfortable. "And I will be grateful for a chance to rest. Anyone who says that travel is nothing more than sitting still has never journeyed any distance in a carriage. All this bumping and jostling around is quite exhausting. I shall be covered in bruises, I am sure." Illness showed itself in her face. Her delicate features were now pinched, and the taut skin over her cheekbones was paper thin. In recent years she had seen the best London doctors, including those recommended by the Queen herself, who had prescribed dietary changes and the letting of her blood. But her malady came and went, sometimes as a faintness or an ache in her breast and side. Only rest made a difference. Sometimes she was as weak as a babe, whilst at other times the life seemed to return to her. "Does no one else feel thrown about like rocks in a sack?" she asked the rest of the carriage. "Or is it just me?" Seated opposite, her 18-year-old daughter Thomasin was a little more patient. "Here, mother, take another of these cushions for your back. It won't be much longer now. Then you will be able to rest. The worst of the journey is over." Thomasin passed across one of the tasseled silver cushions. Her mother wriggled, elbowing Thomasin's elder sister Cecilia in the process.
"Mother, be careful, would you?"
"Well, you might move over a little. You have all that space beside you, whilst I am squashed up against the side here." Cecilia sighed and made a fuss about inching along the padded seat. At least there were only two of them on that side, thought Thomasin, whilst she had to share the opposite seat with both her father and cousin Ellen. Having been in the service of Queen Catherine, travelling about the country from Windsor to Hampton to Greenwich, Thomasin Marwood was accustomed to the longer hours of waiting. If she'd had the choice, she would have preferred to be riding on horseback alongside them, with her long dark hair flying in the wind, rather than trapped inside the Marwood carriage. Her mother would never have allowed it, of course, if only to preserve Thomasin's new dress. A deep forest green velvet, inlaid with an embroidered stomacher in white and yellow, and a string of pearls. She had to look the part, Elizabeth said. There was no point serving the Queen if you looked like a kitchen maid, and she had to always be alert, as you never knew who you might meet. Her mother was referring to a husband, of course. She was always on the lookout for potential husbands for both her elder daughters, who are now, at 18 and 20, well past the usual age of marriage. There was plenty of time for that, though. Thomasin had had her heart bruised already, and was in no hurry to become any man's wife. She followed her mother's gaze through the window, seeking the brief glimpses of countryside visible from the road. Flashes of green and yellow, blocks of brown. They were driving through a spectacular holloway, a sunken road typical of this part of southern England. Overhead, the trees met in a canopy, sending long shadows snaking across the track. They had left their Suffolk home, Eastwell Hall, first thing that morning, and the roads were clear and dry, so they were making good speed. Another hour should bring them within sight of Raycroft, Sir Hugh Truegood's country seat. Perhaps not even that much.
I am looking forward to it as well, said Cecilia, readjusting her skirts. It's so thrilling to be invited to such a distinguished house. I do hope we will make a good impression.
Of course we shall, said Lady Elizabeth, surprised. How could we not? We chose our clothing with care, we have new shoes, and thankfully our manners are always impeccable. Thomasin turned her head aside to conceal her smile. The startling likeness between the two women opposite was even more apparent due to their proximity, with their icy blonde colouring, their straight noses and their clear, water-like eyes. They had even coordinated their clothing. Cecilia's cream-coloured dress had pale green sleeves and silver details like that of her mother, with the addition of miniver fur on her lower arms. Despite having spent most of her years in the Suffolk countryside, she had perfected a regal manner, and, even in the coach, carried herself with elegance. At first glance, the eldest Marwood daughter appeared as aloof and haughty as her mother could be. Yet 20-year-old Cecilia had learned some harsh lessons, and was no longer the romantic country girl chasing an ideal that she had been this time last year.
"It's so long since I have been anywhere at all," Cecilia continued. "Another year in the country, when I should have been married. I want to see new places and new people."
No one flinched when she spoke of marriage, but they were all thinking the same thing. Cecilia's wedding would have gone ahead last autumn, had she not been wooed secretly by the frivolous William Hatton, who had then deserted her and brought shame upon them all. They had all tried to blot out the memory of turning up at the King's Chapel, only to discover that the secret was all over court and the bridegroom had left. Only time had lessened the sting. Cecilia carried on, her thoughts racing ahead.
"And I am so excited to return to London."
Sitting there now in her delicate gown, Cecilia looked as innocent as the spring. But she had always looked that way, Thomasin remembered. At 8 she could pull the cat's tail and lock Thomasin in the barn, or she could tell a barefaced lie and still have the face of an angel.
"Well, we shall see," said their mother, patting Cecilia's arm.
Thomasin looked outside again. She was excited about the visit, as they all were. A few days as a guest on a country estate would be very pleasant. Sir Hugh Truegood was a friend they had met in the spring, a real gentleman, handsome, accomplished, and intelligent. But staying with him at Raycroft wasn't what was really stirring her blood. Her mind was already skipping ahead to what would come afterwards. After their stay with Truegood, the Marwood family were to part ways. Thomasin and her cousin Ellen were returning to Queen Catherine's household at Westminster. The glorious, glittering, troubled court, like a diamond with all its brittle edges and brightness. The Queen had written to them only last week, summoning them back to her side, and both were keen to go. Thomasin's parents and Cecilia would stay with Sir Matthew Russell, Thomasin's uncle, in his London residence, the ancient monk's place. If all turned out well, they might also pay a visit to the court, and their paths would cross again. It would be good to see her uncle Matthew, Thomasin thought, as he had always been so kind. Cecilia's broken engagement may not have been forgotten, though. William Hatton had proved that he could blithely carry on with the courtly game, but it was not so easy for a woman to bounce back from scandal. Thomasin shifted slightly in her seat. She was elbow to elbow with her father in the centre, and her cousin Ellen Russell sat on the far side. Sir Richard Marwood had slept much of the way, waking only to insist they stop for refreshments, before falling asleep again, while Ellen sat quietly, lost in contemplation. "I am surprised that Lady Trugood extended her kind invitation to all of us," Lady Elizabeth continued, wrinkling her nose, "especially given that she has never met me, only you, Thomasin. And even you, Ellen, were included in the invitation, much to my surprise." Again Thomasin turned her head to hide her amusement. Her mother had no idea of the romance that had blossomed between Hugh Trugood and Ellen at Greenwich Palace that summer, which was the sole reason for the family's invitation to Raycroft. But she was not about to correct her mother. The secret was still hidden in Ellen's heart. "And the son," continued Lady Elizabeth, "you met him at Greenwich?"
"At Hampton Court," replied Thomasin. "Actually, no, it was in the hunting lodge at Windsor, just before we had to flee from the sweat. But he came with the king to Greenwich afterwards. Didn't he, Ellen?"
Ellen's round face lit up with the smile that could transform her simple features. She was not a traditionally attractive woman, but there was something pleasing about the symmetry of her large eyes and small, rounded nose. Her colouring was warm, amid brown that was best described as mousy, but she shone with a healthy openness, incapable of deceit.
"And what is the son like?"
Thomasin met Ellen's eyes, offering her the question, but her cousin was content to let her answer.
"Very personable. He is a merchant to the Low Countries, and he has seen the Emperor, so you can imagine he was approved of by his aunt, Queen Catherine."
"Oh," said Lady Elizabeth, "a merchant."
"A little more than that. He runs an entire trade network. Someone has to, or else how would you wear such fine cloth, or hang tapestries in your chamber?"
"But his mother is a lady. I wonder why she permits it." Thomasin frowned.
"Even ladies can fall upon hard times."
"He is the most kind and thoughtful gentleman you could meet," piped up Ellen. "His manners are far better than many of the lords supposed to be above him."
Lady Elizabeth and Cecilia exchanged raised eyebrows. "Of course, we forget you are accustomed to observing such distinctions, Ellen, being raised among merchants in the north," Lady Elizabeth replied.
"I am accustomed to gentlemen," Ellen replied simply, refusing to take offence at their slur upon her humble origins, "from my time serving with the Queen."
The horses drew to a halt at a crossroads. In the fields opposite, an army of men were scything down the hay and gathering it into golden bundles. Women and children walked behind them, gleaning the strands left behind and carrying them in their aprons. Some stopped and held up their hands to shade their eyes as they looked at the Marwood coach, with its four grey horses and aristocratic crest. The sweet smell of their harvest reached the occupants inside. Sir Richard snorted and jolted awake.
"Are we here?"
"Not yet," replied Lady Elizabeth, looking outside.
"What have I missed?"
He straightened his shoulders. "Trees, fields, trees, more trees," said Cecilia in a bored tone. One of the farmers had come up to speak with the coachman, wiping his brow in the sun as he held off his carved scythe. He had an open, friendly face, tanned by outdoor work. As Thomasin watched, he nodded and pointed down the road to the left.
The horses started up again and the coach rumbled on. A village flashed past, with beamed houses built close to the road, a pretty church and busy forge.
Barely were they out the other side when the trees rose up again and the road became narrower, rising and falling.
One side of the road fell away steeply into a tree-lined valley, making Thomason a little uneasy about the carriage wheels going too close to the edge. The trunks were thick and ancient, the silence complete.
"This must be the Ashdown Forest," said Ellen. "Hugh wrote that it comes up to the edge of the park, and the hunting is excellent."
"Did he?"
asked Lady Elizabeth in an arch tone.
"I am sure we are near."
Ellen was right. Presently the trees on one side gave way to a walled park, running the length of the road. After another mile they turned in through a pair of tall cast-iron gates, and in the distance they saw the dignified red-brick splendour of Raycroft Court. 2. The Marwood carriage drew up outside a wide-fronted house with mullioned windows and a central tower. It faced east, capturing the afternoon sun, which was that distinctive September shade of yellow. The bricks were interlocked in the fashionable Flemish style, laid in a black diamond pattern. Stacks of twisted chimneys stood out against the blue sky. A number of servants were already lining up outside, in livery of green and black, embroidered on the breast with an oak leaf in brown silk. Thomason's father, having now fully recovered his senses, was the first to step outside, before reaching in to assist his wife. They still made a handsome couple, Thomason thought, married for over 2 decades, despite the differences in their characters. It had been a love match, overcoming their parents' disapproval, and 6 healthy children attested to its success. The little ones had been left behind in the family's Suffolk home. Lettuce, who was blossoming into a beauty at 13, Jolly Alice, aged 6, young Master Digby, the family's only son of 9 years old, and toddling Susanna. Cecilia, Thomason and Ellen climbed out in turn, gazing up in awe at their surroundings.
"It's twice the size of Eastwell," whispered Sir Richard. "I should have become a merchant."
A large man in a formal robe and hat bowed before them.
"My lord, ladies, welcome to Raycroft. I am Peter Southey, Sir Hugh's steward. Please, come this way."
The entrance was cool and smelled of old stone and ash. Thomason's first impressions were of dark wood and high beamed ceilings. Ahead of them, a magnificent carved staircase occupied the centre of the house, twisting up once, twice, with an ornately decorated rail and banisters, where carved fruit and leaves had been polished to a shine by the hands of many generations. It was truly magnificent. She felt slightly overawed. Southey paused for a moment while they stood in admiration.
"The original house was built over 200 years ago as a hospital, endowed by the local monastery of St. Luke. But this wing was added by Sir Hugh's grandfather."
He led them through a carved screen into the great hall, with heavy beams meeting overhead and coats of arms hanging around the walls. The hearth was lit at the far end, despite the warm weather, and fresh flowers had been placed in jars in the window alcoves, adding a sweet, heady scent above the wood smoke. A central table was laden with wine and small beer, grapes and cheese, white bread and wafers. Heavy wooden settles along the wall welcomed them with cushions.
"If you would like to take some refreshment, I will inform my lady that you have arrived. Sir Hugh is overseeing some emergency repairs in the park at present, but will be here shortly."
Thomason took the opportunity to look around. She was reluctant to sit down again after being cooped up in the coach, so she stretched her legs by pacing down the length of the hall, noticing the little details, the linen fold carved panels, the smooth polished floor, the pristine hangings on the wall with the colours still bright, the gleaming silver candlesticks and brackets. Wandering to one of the windows,
She looked out over a chapel and a neatly kept garden, full of thriving plants and stone statues. Beyond them, she caught a glimpse of a grey-blue lake.
"It's so fine," said Ellen, sidling up to her. "Almost too fine."
"It is overwhelming," Thomasin agreed. "Just try to remain calm. You know how Hugh feels about you. Trust that."
"I was not born to this."
"Many are not, but they rise above their station. Think of Wolsey or Cromwell. Luck can bring about transformations. You deserve this."
And yet, surrounded by such beauty and abundance, Thomasin felt a flash of envy rising within her. Last summer, Hugh Truegood had been attracted to her first, before he'd noticed Ellen. Had things played out differently, all this might have been hers.
But no, she told herself, laughing at the memory. She could not marry a man who couldn't hold a conversation or dance, not for all the fine houses in Sussex. The family regrouped as Southey returned, followed by an old lady walking with a stick. She was no more than 60, but her progress was slow as she dragged one leg a little behind her. Her clothing appeared to belong to an earlier age, her headdress plain, with a thick folded wimple so her face was barely visible. Diamonds sparkled on her fingers.
"Lady Truegood," announced Southey, although the old woman at once waved him away with her stick. Sir Richard bowed. Lady Elizabeth dropped a curtsy, and the others followed their example. The old woman looked at them long and hard before speaking. Thomasin felt like a creature pinned by the gaze of a hawk.
"You are Hugh's friends?"
She spoke abruptly. They were all taken aback by the coldness of her tone.
"I am Sir Richard Marwood. This is my wife, Elizabeth, my daughters Cecilia and Thomasin, and my niece, Ellen."
"Too many names."
Lady Truegood stared from one face to another, pausing briefly before Cecilia.
You're a pretty one. Married?"
Cecilia blushed and shook her head.
"Good for Hugh."
Thomasin felt mortified, but Lady Truegood was not finished yet. She looked at each of them in turn, stepping closer and squinting, until it became apparent that her eyesight was weak. She dismissed Ellen with a grunt, then ran her eyes over Thomasin's dark eyes, tanned skin, and small nose sprinkled with freckles.
"What are you? Another daughter?"
"I'm Thomasin Marwood, my lady, and this is my cousin, Ellen Russell." Lady Truegood's head snapped up, as if she had not expected a reply.
"I suppose you both are unwed, too?"
"I am. We are," Thomasin replied, taken by surprise. The stick tapped upon the floor with impatience, although the old lady did not move.
"How long are you here?"
Even Thomasin's diplomatic father was thrown by her directness. As he sought an answer, she repeated her question.
"How long? Speak up."
"Your son invited us for 3 days. I apologise for any inconvenience this may cause to your ladyship."
Lady Elizabeth was less prepared to pander to the old woman. "We have come all the way from Suffolk." Lady Truegood whipped round her head with surprising speed.
"A strange choice."
But Lady Elizabeth was not easily deterred. "My lady, when I heard your name, I had hoped that you might be the Lady Truegood who had served the late Queen Elizabeth, as I did years ago."
"She's dead. Did you know she's dead?"
They exchanged glances, a realisation dawning about their hostess. The late Queen had been dead for 25 years now. Sir Richard stepped in.
"Is your son here? We can wait for him."
Lady Truegood did not answer. She simply turned and shuffled away, dragging her foot as she went.
"Remarkable," protested Lady Elizabeth. "Most remarkable. I have never had such a welcome, or lack of it. I am sure it is not the woman I once knew."
"She has clearly lost her mind," replied Sir Richard. "All will be well when Hugh appears, I am certain."
Thomasin sat beside Ellen on one of the settles.
"What do you make of her?" Ellen shrugged. It is as your father says. She is old, and her mind has gone. She is to be pitied. You are always the kindest person I know. Ellen smiled gently. We might all be like Lady Truegood one day.
It was a quarter of an hour before Sir Hugh Truegood came striding into the hall on his long legs. He was dressed for the country, in a simple russet doublet, a white shirt, and outdoor boots. His head was bare to the elements. The simplicity of his attire was quite in contrast with their surroundings, putting them more at ease. Thomasin was struck again by his colouring, the coppery red hair, the tanned skin, the amber eyes. He had a big frame, wide shoulders, and broad cheekbones. There was no doubt he was a handsome man.
Sir Richard, Lady Elizabeth, ladies, my sincere apologies.
He bowed low before shaking hands with each of them in turn. Thomasin noticed him linger with Ellen, who was struggling to conceal the pleasure she felt at seeing him again.
You are all most welcome. I had hoped to be here to meet you in person, but we had an old tree come down last night, blocking one of the roads in the park that my tenants use for market. It is good to meet you, sir, and thank you for your kind invitation, said Sir Richard. It was the acquaintance of these charming ladies that convinced me to open my home. Hugh beamed at Thomasin and Ellen. I hear that you already met my mother. Please excuse her. Age has affected her mind. I am away so much she is often alone and unused to visitors. I hope your journey was not too arduous.
Not at all. And the weather was kind.
Come, let me show you your rooms. You can rest and refresh yourselves before dinner.
Thank you. That would be most acceptable, said Lady Elizabeth, beaming and offering Hugh her arm.
Just like the house, dinner did not disappoint. A long table covered with fresh white cloths and crystal glasses had been set up in the hall, topped by the huge silver centrepiece of a ship. Its carved sails and bow caught the candlelight, after which Thomasin could make out the delicate filigree work on the rigging and the little crow's nest on the mast. No doubt it had been fashioned in some workshop in Burgundy or Antwerp. As they approached the table, musicians were already playing on the pipes and lute. Hugh Truegood had directed Peter Southey to arrange the seating, so that he had Ellen and Lady Elizabeth placed on either side of him, then Thomasin and Cecilia in the centre, while Sir Richard, to his consternation, was placed at the end, beside the seat reserved for Lady Truegood. She came shuffling in upon the arm of Peter Southey, looking up in surprise, as if she had forgotten that they had guests. The presence of her son, though, appeared to make her more subdued.
"It truly is a most magnificent house," piped up Lady Elizabeth, as soon as they were seated and the servants were pouring out wine. "How long has it been in your family?"
"I am the fifth generation," replied Hugh. "The original wing was given to my great-great-grandfather by Henry V after the Battle of Agincourt."
The table was impressed.
"And your father?"
Lady Elizabeth continued, returning to her memories.
"Might our paths ever have crossed? Richard and I were at court in the early years of the king's reign, and I was there occasionally before, although it was after the days of the old queen."
"My father was a diplomat to the Low Countries. He founded our company in Antwerp and supplied the king with tapestries and manuscripts. It is him I have to thank for our current prosperity. But mother was at court during that time. She did serve the Queen."
Thomasin shot a look at Lady Truegood to see if she minded herself and her late husband being spoken of, but she appeared to be absorbed in her wine glass.
"I don't think I recall him," confessed Lady Elizabeth. "It is so long ago, although I had thought I recognised your name."
"Father spent much time out of the country, sending his merchants to London. He disliked court."
"And he is no longer with us?"
"He died when I was 8, but he had not set foot in England for 2 years.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?